Persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another lights on listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free. The devil beware. Pastor Scheidbach is on the air.
Hello, I'm Dr. Jerry Scheidbach, pastor of the Lighthouse Baptist Church in Santa Maria, California, and your brain masseur. Get ready for your brain massage.
The battle for America is on.
Interesting. Newsom invited former President Obama to appear on his podcast. 20 minutes into the live stream, the not-so-dynamic duo had 264 viewers. You might have expected Obama to be a bigger draw. The Times. They are a-changing.
Oh, the times, they are a-changing.
It's time for your brain massage.
Truth served here, flavored with delectable wit, succulent sagacity, luscious logic, a gourmet meal for the mind.
Let's talk about our beloved state, California. Assembly Bill 495 allows non-biological related persons to fill out a form called the Caregiver's Authorization Affidavit, in which they affirm they are an adult with an established familial or mentoring relationship with the child, or a familial relationship with a relative of the child, and thereby be able to take the child into their custody and act in locus parentis, in the place of the parent. What is a familial relationship? Anyone claiming a connection with the family without regard to any legal or biological connection, such as a friend, a neighbor, somebody who is considered part of the family, that kind of thing, or who is willing to make that claim. Literally anyone could make this claim and act in locus parentis or in place of the parent. What proof of relationship is required to file this affidavit? I asked Brave AI. And the response? None. Quote, the caregiver's authorization affidavit under California AB 495 is not submitted to a government authority for approval. Instead, it is presented directly by the caregiver to the institution, such as schools, childcare facilities, or healthcare providers, when the authorization is needed for enrollment or treatment. Continuing the quotation, the affidavit does not need to be notarized or filed with any court or agency. The caregiver signs it under penalty of perjury, affirming they are caring for the child and are authorized to make certain decisions. These institutions are required to honor the affidavit in good faith, without verifying its contents, as long as it appears complete and valid, end quote. The documentation used to support this assessment is footnoted here in my notes with links to facilitate your own research. I have a sponsor's FAQ page, Frequently Asked Questions by Celeste, the sponsor of the bill, a Family Research Council report on the law, the actual text of the bill, a voter voice response to the bill, and then Dr. Chappell's blog, Parental Rights on the Chopping Block in California, was particularly insightful, I thought. I've got it noted here. Another Family Research Council article, a summary of the law by State Senator Aisha Wahab here. In case you are interested, I've linked a Snopes take on this. And finally, here is an assessment prepared by a group called Digital Democracy. Now, how does one obtain this form? Well, Brave AI responded, quote, caregivers obtain the affidavit form directly, typically from school or healthcare offices, or online through state resources. No third-party approval is required to use it, end quote. I asked, well, what notice is given to the parents? Answer, none. Quote, parents are not required to be notified when a caregiver's authorization affidavit is created or used under California AB 495. The law allows an adult caregiver, such as a relative or even someone with a, quote, mentoring relationship, end quote, with a child, to sign the affidavit and authorize medical care or school enrollment without parental consent, notification, or signature. Multiple sources confirm that the bill contains no requirement for parent notification, and institutions like schools and healthcare providers are protected when acting in good faith on the affidavit, even without verifying parental awareness. End quote. Now, anyone can make the assertion without providing any proof. They do so under penalty of perjury, and, well, we all know how effective that sort of thing is with, well, let's say their gun laws or voting. The only people who would be concerned about that are the people you don't need to be concerned about. I asked, is the person completing this form required to show proof of their status or relationship to the child or even proof of their identity? And the answer, quote, no. The person completing the caregiver's authorization affidavit under California AB 495 is not required to show proof of their identity or status. According to multiple sources, the quote goes on, the affidavit does not require notarization, background checks, court review, or verification of identity. Institutions like schools and healthcare providers are not obligated to verify the caregiver's relationship to the child or confirm the validity of the identification provided. If they did provide something, that's optional. The law allows authorization based solely on the signed affidavit, with no requirement for the institution to investigate further. And it goes on, some sources note that a caregiver may provide a Social Security number or driver's license number, but not the actual card, and there is no obligation to confirm its authenticity, end quote. It's optional. It's not even verified if you do provide it, setting aside any concern we might have about the influence of human traffickers finding a way to get embedded within our government's child protection services, as was revealed a while back by RFK. This law provides loopholes so large, other illegals, like Jashanpreet Singh, you know, the guy that drove his 18-wheeler Mack truck into slow-moving traffic, killing three people. The loopholes in this bill are so large, you could drive, an illegal could drive a Mack truck through them and destroy the lives of children for years to come. Read this business about Singh driving his Mack truck into slow-moving traffic, killing three in this article posted on the Homeland Security website. He got his license, by the way, courtesy of Gavin Newsom's Department of Motor Vehicles, which issues commercial driver's license to illegal aliens. And so now we can thank the Democrat-dominated California Assembly and Senate and a Democrat governor or Democrat governor for every child exploited by wicked cartel-controlled operators who find a way to take advantage of this virtual invitation to exploit children in this state. Whether or not Celeste, sponsor of this bill, is well-intentioned, and I think she is, she does not understand that the function of lawmaking is to protect the weak and vulnerable from evil, from nefarious, exploitative predators. This bill is written as if there's no evil in the world, no predators, no one who would take advantage of the utter failure to close the loopholes. Weak and ineffective laws facilitate evil, invite it. This bill is an invitation to predators to manipulate a major loophole to gain access to vulnerable children. It's poorly written. The children most exposed to exploitation by this poorly written bill or law are the very children Celeste wanted to provide for. The children left behind when their parents are deported. This bill allows the unintended consequence of anyone manipulating the system to capture these children, intimidate them into silence, take them into their custody, and provide cover for themselves by completing this stupid form to make their custodianship legal. There's no home visit to follow up, There's nothing here to ensure this person is who they claim to be. What can go wrong, right? As I read this, I thought someone could complete this form and usurp the parents' rights, exposing the child to danger before the parents even realize what happened. This law is liable to abuse, and the abuse is going to fall ultimately on the children. It always does. The Democrat California Assembly, Senate, and the governor's office failed our state again. We need to break the hold of these unreasonable, inept, and I mean just plain incompetent lawmakers from our state and get sharp, intelligent, reasonable, common sense people running this state. This is a case in point. Celeste seems to be someone who truly wants to help, but she does not understand the presence of evil and does not look at this law from the perspective of how evil people might exploit it. It's a Swiss cheese bill full of holes, inviting all sorts of devils to crawl through and get to our children. Lighthouse Baptist Church is stepping up to do something about this, to rescue our once golden state. Besides the Brain Massage radio show and podcast, the Brain Massage Live podcast, which is live streamed three nights a week, and the Issachar Report and prayer meetings on Sunday evenings at 5 p.m., we have a full-time evangelist, Brock Campbell, who presently represents six California churches in Sacramento. Now, he's not a lobbyist, really. He's a prophet, taking the Word of God into our capital, opening the Bible and talking to them about what it says. Cali Baptist Capital Ministry. His goal is to represent at least one church in each of the 80 assembly districts in our state, and to apply the salt and turn on the gospel light of Christ's kingdom into our state capital. Now, Evangelist Brock Campbell has completed 1 year of service in this way to the Capitol. During that time, he has visited Assembly and state representatives over 400 times and testified in dozens of hearings on behalf of the Lord's churches. He is not playing politics. He's influencing our state representatives as an ambassador for Christ. We are also praying for good, reasonable, common sense, honest, and competent candidates who will step forward and step into these positions and provide competent leadership for our state and deliver us from the unreasonable, sometimes well-intentioned, but simple-minded representatives. Here is a candidate for California Assembly, the 37th District, that I would like you to meet. Now, I met Pornomawag a little over a year ago. She worked within the California GOP for a long time and is very well acquainted with California politics. She is a conservative running for the California Assembly seat, District 37, covering Santa Barbara County from Carpinteria to the south, up to the north here of Santa Maria, including the Pomo, by the way, in Slo County, and New Kiama over to the east. She laid out her vision for California a while back in a conversation I had with her, and I was impressed with her credentials, her candor, her insightful understanding of our state and what needs to be done to save it, and frankly, her frankness impressed me as well. She outlined five things that must be done to turn the state around, and I'd like you to hear from her. Now, this is a lengthy interview, and I had to break it up into segments to in order to make it useful for our radio broadcast. In this segment, she'll introduce herself and address concern number one. Hello, I'm Dr. Scheidbach, pastor at Lighthouse Baptist Church in your Brain Masseur, and I have the privilege to spend some time with Pornomawag on what's wrong with California and what can be done to fix it. So welcome, Pornoma. So glad you're with us.
Well, thank you for having me here. It's my pleasure.
All right. Well, I'm going to get started by asking you just to tell us, who is Pornomawag?
I was born and brought up in Mumbai, India. And then at the age of 18, I moved to the United States to attend college or university. So I've been in this country close to 34 years now. I got my bachelor's in finance from the University of Maryland, and then I got an MBA from the University of Alaska. I have a background in the hard sciences, which is biology, chemistry, and physics. And I also have a very serious background in finance and economics. I did some consulting work, and I still do on occasion. For cities and counties, I look at their budgets, I look at their expenses, and I essentially do contract work for them in order to save money for the cities and counties.
Thank you.
Because they spend way too much of taxpayer money on a lot of nonsensical projects.
I would like you to tell my audience what you have to say about the five critical issues facing California today.
I think these are the five issues that every candidate should be looking at, regardless of what party they come from. The first and the most important one, in my opinion, as a financial analyst and somebody who looks at budgets and expenses quite a bit, is you have to control the state budget. The state budget is highly bloated. It needs to be balanced. And so unnecessary waste needs to be cut out. Let me give you a very, very good concrete example of this, of the waste. In 2018, fiscal year 2018-2019, which Jerry Brown Jr. was still the governor, the budget, the entire budget of the state of California was $179 billion. Fast forward to 2023-2024, under Gavin Newsom, the budget has become this mega budget of $310 billion. That is a variance, a delta, of $128 extra billion. I believe that the state of California should not exceed a budget, a yearly budget of $100 billion. We're just spending money like water. Our budgets are just way too big.
Okay, my dear friends, hang on through the break. I'll be right back.
Let my people breathe. Unmasking the Mass Controversy with Science and Scripture answers two questions, and answers both definitively. Do masks work? That's the science part of the book. And after 964 scientific articles were examined, producing over 800 pages of notes comparing the studies with what real science says, the definitive answer is no. Chapter 5 is worth the price of the book, Natural Filtration versus the Masks. It'll blow your mind. Go to GodsWar2020.com. The devil beware. Pastor Scheidbach is on the air.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Dr. Jerry Scheidbach, pastor of the Lighthouse, your brain masseur, and Paul Revere's lantern lighter, lighting the lamps in the church belfry arch, singling the enemies on the march, an enemy that would steal from us our liberties. It looks like everybody's talking about the pain of the shutdown and angst about Trump's destruction or destroying the White House. I'd much rather talk about the prophetic implications of Israel's latest moves on the West Bank. That's west of the Jordan River, northwest of the Dead Sea little section there. Anyway, yeah, allow me to address that in a very abbreviated statement. If you give appropriate regard and attention to Jacob's last day's prophecy in Genesis 49, where the Bible stipulates that the prophecy from Jacob is for the last days. Now, according to Joel, Acts, and Hebrews, the prophetic period called the last days began at Pentecost, and it continues through to the coming of the Lord both for and then with his saints. We now live in the last days, the period during which Jacob's prophecy is scheduled for fulfillment. All right, what's all this about? Here you go. Jacob said that in the last days, Zebulun would occupy the seacoast near the shores of Zidon. That's in Lebanon. The Bible says, Zebulun shall dwell at the haven of the sea, and he shall be for an haven of ships, and his border shall be unto Zidon. That's Genesis 49:13. Zebulun never occupied a haven by the sea throughout the time Israel dwelt in her land. I mean, that's going from Joshua all the way through Rehoboam when the kingdom was divided, and nor any time after that. It has never happened. But it's going to happen. And it will happen during these last days. It suggests the tribes will be identified again, as is predicted, by the way, in Revelation chapter 7, and sufficiently restored to her land so that Zebulun will occupy territory presently held by Lebanon. That suggests a huge shift in the geopolitical boundaries of Israel. Complaining about the shutdown. First, it's clearly misdirected, at least on the left. I should say the left is trying hard with all their might to misdirect the American people about this and try to shift the blame to the Republicans. That's not going to happen. Everyone knows this is Schumer's shutdown. The Democrats own this. They've been caught more than once even declaring the shutdown as a thing that's good for them, something they want, a tool they are using to break the resolve of Trump and the Republicans and force them to give in to their demands. What do they want? Well, they want to fund health care for illegals. They are willing to defund our soldiers and inflict pain on those they have turned into dependents upon their welfare state. And they want to do all that to blackmail Americans into cowering to their demands. It's blackmail. They are punishing our military and federal employees and then holding their own constituents hostage, the welfare crowd. They are using the pain they have caused to hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions of Americans, all because of their hatred for Trump and MAGA Americans. Listen to these liberals howl, believing the lie that Trump is doing this to them and demonstrating how completely out of touch with reality these people have become. Here's a guy whining about an email he got informing him that, well, he's going to have to work 20 hours a week if he wants to keep receiving $740 a month in electronic benefit transfers, which gives him credits to use to buy food from the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program called SNAPS. I had to go look all that. I didn't even know this stuff. I knew it existed, but I didn't understand all these SNAPs and EBTs, whatever, but okay. He's cussing. He's mad. He's explaining that the taxpayer works for him. Literally said that. The taxpayer works for him. He said, I'm not going to work for nobody. Okay. But anyway, he said, the American taxpayer, that's their job. They're supposed to work to buy food for my children. Yeah. Anyway, here's another one who said, did you hear what's going on with Trump and them? Apparently, they shut down November and December food stamps. I got a note from them saying they got to shut down my food stamps. Then she starts ranting. You bet not. You know, I better get my food stamps. You should see her, man. She's mad and she's defiant and she's arrogant and puffed up. And she's going to tell us, you better give me my food. That's just amazing how these people are. And oh, boy, spitting fire out of those eyes and shaking her head. I think she's demon possessed. Here's another one who has it all sorted out. She argues that her receiving food stamps doesn't affect us. It won't change anything in our lives, in an apparent assumption that that is the reason we should let Schumer blackmail America, impede the job we voted Trump into office to do, to take care of. And besides all that, she has a very limited understanding of the economics of socialism, which she clearly embraces even if she doesn't understand that. One more. This lady doesn't know how she's going to celebrate the holidays without food stamps. And friend, that's on us. All but one of these was F this and F that, and every other word was a cuss word, and full of anger and hatred and threatening and just totally outraged. And I also noticed that all but one of these had, at least the ladies, were wearing some very serious eyelashes, I got to tell you. And I think those things cost a little bit of something or other. And obviously expensive makeup. Look that way to me. I know a little bit about that because my wife uses it. So I'm not sure what that, and I don't know what it costs. Not sure what that's about. But anyway, the answer to all their problems is to, well, get a job. I don't recommend a government gig at present, har har, but get a job. I remember when we hit some difficult times, and I remember my mama refused to take food stamps or any kind of assistance from the government. That was like no way in our house. She took in laundry and washed other people's clothes and ironed them in order to make whatever money we needed or that she could to supplement us during the tough times. Now, more than once, I remember, one time I remember I needed some shoes. Now, I didn't know I needed shoes. I just assumed go barefoot, truly. But she looked at my shoes and said, I need some shoes. I said, oh, okay. And I heard her say, Lord, what am I going to do? That was interesting. And then suddenly she brightened up and went to a large jar she pulled off a shelf up high and where she dropped in all of her tips. She worked as a waitress in a nearby truck stop. She kept them there and taught herself to forget it was there. She didn't want to touch it. She kept it there for rainy day type stuff. Anyway, for just such a time. And she went into the jar and pulled out enough money to buy me some shoes. You know what? That's why to this day I tip pretty good. Probably more than I should. I remember how important that tip money was to my mom and our family. The Bible says, if you don't work, you don't eat. Hey, fella, be a man. I got a good book for you. It's called Lessons from the Gym, Built for Men by Coach Chris Cucciera. You really need that book, fella, and learn what it means to be a man. Man up and feed your children. Now, you ladies, listen, you don't work, you don't eat. That works for all of us. That's the way it is. Anytime we as a nation ignore biblical principles, we create these kinds of problems and subjugate people beneath the dignity of even basic humanity. Now, I have been listening to these people complain about Trump destroying the White House, right? Violating the sanctity of our national emblems and all that kind of stuff. I noticed that it's the same people that look the other way, and many of them who even applaud when these evil, wicked people deface the memorials of our war heroes and George Washington and so on. They throw red paint all over a statue memorializing George Washington and complain when Trump wants to a construction project on the White House. It's unbelievable. I noticed that they have a seriously concerning hearing problem. You know, Trump's paying for this project out of his own funds with the help of other private donors. It would be cool if he let us all get in on it and put out a general offer inviting any Americans who would like to donate to the construction of the wall room. But don't use WinRed, please. Kidding. Anyway, as you know, many presidents have done construction projects on the White House over the years. Teddy Roosevelt modernized the White House in 1902. Constructed the West Wing to separate executive offices from the private residence. Taft expanded the West Wing in 1909, had the Oval Office built. Wilson demolished the Colonial Garden in 1913, replaced it with what we now call the Rose Garden. Coolidge did some significant renovations in 27. Let's see, Hoover remodeled the West Wing in 29, created a partial basement. That had to make a mess. Franklin Roosevelt made major expansions to the White House, added a second floor, and enlarged the basement to the West Wing in 34. He relocated the Oval Office to its current position. That had to take some demolition, right? Anyway, Truman oversaw the most extensive renovations in the White House history from 1948 to 52. It amounted to a total reconstruction of the interior, leaving only the exterior wall standing. Nixon converted the indoor swimming pool, installed for FDR, I think it was him. Anyway, Nixon turned it into the briefing room that we use now. He did that in 70. He added a one-lane bowling alley. Ford installed an outdoor pool in 75. That, by the way, was funded with private donations. Carter installed, Republicans do that, you know, anyway, Carter installed solar hot water heating panels, okay, which were removed in the 80s. Bush modernized the Situation Room in the early 2000s. Clinton restored and refurbished the Executive Mansion in 1993, and then when he got out of office, stole all the furniture when he left. Nobody was concerned about that. And then GW did some refurbishing. Obama converted a tennis court into a basketball court. Anyway, no big deal on those two. But Trump is building a ballroom, and suddenly lefties become aware of the sanctity in the sacrosanct building that shouldn't be touched and shouldn't be altered and shouldn't be destroyed. And they claim he's destroying the White House. And of course, you know, they're going for the subliminal double entendre. So let's look at that. What the left really doesn't like is the fact that they were trying to destroy the White House, and Trump took it out of their wicked little hands before they can complete the job. And now he's constructing a new, vibrant, shining, glorious White House, that city on a hill that shines the light of liberty to all the world. All right, I'm going to have to wrap it up. I've gone over my time. We'll pick it up on Saturday night. I've lit the lamps at the Church Belfry Arch. You know, let me know you see they're on. You can email me by going to our website, brainmassage.net. You can call me at 805-314-2114. God bless you. God bless America. And I'll see you in church.
Your next brain massage is scheduled for Saturday at 12 noon and Sunday at 7 a.m.